When I make jokes, everyone is dumber.
You are listening to the Paradox Church Podcast.
All right, welcome to the Worldview Podcast at the Paradox Church. This is our second installment where we get to talk about worldview. We've defined that as the story that you have of the world and how you make sense of your life in it. We're going to talk today about making sense of morality, right and wrong. And then also we'll talk about tolerance in today's podcast. We've got a great guest. We've got Matt Walker here. Can't wait to introduce him and get into that. We've got some Q&A at the end. But first, Brother AJ, it's good to have you again.
Good to be here.
You doing good? You're wearing a Village Pizza t-shirt. What is that?
It's from Corrales, New Mexico. I've got friends that run a pizza shop.
It's amazing.
It's delicious pizza.
Cool. We can have pizza at lunch after this.
It's in New Mexico.
Oh, okay. So we can't go there. Okay. We talked about, AJ, the new tolerance a few weeks ago and how the new tolerance is not like the old tolerance, hence the distinction between old and new. The old tolerance was accepting the existence of other views and other beliefs, but now the new tolerance is more not just accepting the existence, but we have to accept the actual views. We have to hold them as equally true as our own, there's no distinction between the existence of it and its validity. And so one quote, and I loved this quote from that Sunday. Of course I did, because I'm telling the story, right? It was my quote. But it was from the Unitarian Universalist minister, so liberal reverend here, Reverend Dr. William Murray. He said this: "I get a little impatient with the concept that we should tolerate all religions because people are entitled to their own beliefs. If a religion is based on ignorance and irrationality and totalitarianism," so he's talking about, you know, people that, churches that think that Jesus is God, the Bible is true, things like that, so us, "there is no need to stand aside and pretend that that's okay. Here's the kicker, here's the quote that I love. "What I would say about tolerance is that we cannot tolerate intolerance." And so he talked a lot about the intolerance of this new tolerance. And how if we don't hold to what they hold to, that all beliefs and views should be held equally true, then they're going to be intolerant towards our lack of tolerance, which is quite funny. But what I wanted us to talk about just briefly before we get to Matt is Christians, especially young millennial Christians, which, I mean, that's our church, have a tendency to be influenced by that kind of view, that we are to be tolerant in such a way that we have to accept all beliefs and all views. Why do you think that people in the church can be so influenced by this idea of the new tolerance?
Yeah, it makes me wonder if there is so much value to be had to be tolerant, that to then express intolerant views as defined by others would put you on the outside. My take on millennials is they're very connected, they're very networked, they're very relationally and broadly connected to one another, and so to be on the outside of that would be a wreck to them. There's this idea of a FOMO, fear of missing out, that would apply even to relationships and ideas, and so I think there is in them just a natural sense of let's do this together, that then to be on the outside, that's anathema. That's the opposite of what you would want to do.
Yeah, and I wonder if what's driving us or what's the anchor is relationships as opposed to the Bible.
Because you see that even with, I don't want to tell that person about Jesus until we've had 17 coffees with each other.
Right.
And I need to really know them. That's your brother. That's your blood brother. Yeah, but we've been rough, had a rough relationship over the years. I just need to rebuild that before I'll tell him the truth. So it even works that the Bible says to give an answer for your faith, but we don't obey that because relationship. That becomes this thing we put over those scriptures. Until I have this, I can't do what's right. Or I won't risk this to do what is right.
And then I wonder if also there's that. So one thing that we said that particular Sunday on tolerance was that the most immoral thing right now seems to be that we would be intolerant, right? The worst thing would be that we would be labeled intolerant. And so I wonder if there's just a fear there as well of being labeled the, you know, intolerant, or being labeled the hypocrite, or something like that.
Yeah, and I think too, we've got certain poster children up in front of us as the intolerant, and it's kind of ridiculous. The person that's presented is, there's nothing cool about them. There's nothing, they don't dress right. They don't talk right. Their hair's funky. They say ridiculous things in ridiculous ways. And so intolerance is linked to this caricature of somebody ridiculous.
So if I speak out against somebody's views or beliefs, all of a sudden I'm equated with Bill O'Reilly. That idea?
Yeah, I was thinking Donald Trump, but yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I just wanted to go straight to the
Oh, you're just going right to, yes. Right to the Donald.
Yes.
Wrong.
Huge.
Exactly. And so then what's the antidote? I mean, what for us as pastors, for us in the church, for those that would be listening and want to have an understanding of how to move towards more of a, you know, an anchor of the scriptures and not an anchor to the culture. What's the antidote for the Christian to be, whose posture towards the world, posture towards this idea of tolerance, this gospel of tolerance, what's the antidote to some of those things, to not being, you know, equated with Donald Trump or Bill O'Reilly, to not, you know, what's the antidote?
I think one would be embracing the idea that we are not going to be accepted. The view that we carry, that has been brought to us, opened up our eyes to, is not going to be embraced. They killed our God.
Yeah.
They rejected our God. They will reject us. And so to strive for that is a foolish endeavor. And then I think there's got to be a greater fear of obeying the Lord than there is a fear of pleasing others. And those are big antidotes.
That's great. I completely agree. I think that's really good. And then just also to understand historically that when the church has been persecuted, it has thrived. And I'm just historically, that's what's happening now in China and in different, you know, different places like that. So we're going to meet our guest.
Right on.
And so we'll transition into hanging out with Matt Walker. I'm looking forward to talking with Matt. I like Matt. All right, we got Matt Walker as our guest. Matt, how are you, man?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
Let me just introduce you to our audience here. There's it's quite the bio. I like your bio. There's some things that are not on your bio that I want to mention. But Matt Walker is the founder and president of Anchor Apologetics, which focuses on demonstrating and equipping others to demonstrate the beauty and credibility of the gospel with winsome arguments grounded in love. I love that. You're a graduate of Texas Tech University.
Reckon Tech.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't know that was.
Get your guns up, baby.
Yeah. I didn't know that. Now I learned something. Each school has their own kind of thing.
Yeah. There's these things called colleges, and they have like songs and hand gestures.
Yeah. I didn't go.
I didn't go to school either.
And we're the ones that are hosting this podcast. Maybe that's what's going on.
I think that's why we have guests.
You've done some graduate work at Southwestern Seminary. You've served as the research assistant to best-selling author and apologist Josh McDowell. And as the executive director of the Center for Christ and Culture. So you're an apologetics guy.
Yeah. I like it a little bit.
And then you've got a wonderful sweet wife. I love her as well. She's great. Beth.
Yeah, thanks.
And your son's name is Ravi.
That's right.
Yeah, who's he named after?
Ravi Zacharias, an apologist.
Yeah. So, and does Ravi Zacharias have a podcast?
He does.
He does. Yeah. I wonder if some people listen to ours instead of his now.
Probably. Yeah, this is way better.
Yeah. But just what's not on here, like you played some college football.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Played a couple years in 1 year at school up in Kansas.
Okay.
Baker University. Okay. Another year at Texas Lutheran.
Okay. What position?
Inside linebacker.
Inside linebacker.
I was a headhunter, baby.
Yeah. All right. Good. And now you don't have the same, you know, strength that you had before.
True.
Okay.
True.
Okay. Yeah. But that's been a while, right?
Old and feeble. Yeah.
Yes. I'm with you. We're both has-beens. I think what I wanted you to do first is just give us a definition of apologetics. What is apologetics, and why is it important for the church to have apologetics, to practice that?
Yeah, sure. Apologetics comes from the scriptures. The whole idea of it comes from 1 Peter 3:15. To honor Christ as Lord, and always being ready to give a reason or defense to anyone who asks for the hope that you have. So that word reason or defense is the word apologia, which means to give a defense. And so essentially what it is it's a branch of theology that that we employ to be able to defend the Christian faith, to be able to engage with other worldviews, and basically, you know, see how they line up to reality, to the Christian worldview, and engage with those, you know, thoughtfully and compassionately. And in terms of how it, you know, affects the church or how it's important to the church, you know, I'm sure you guys have read the Pew results with the nuns on the rise, people that don't have any kind of religious affiliation. They're at like 23% right now.
N-O-N-E.
Yes, not nuns with the dresses and the hats on, but yeah, N-O-N-E-S.
There'd be nothing more fearful than nuns on the rise. Like, that just sounds like a bad horror film.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and so, I mean, this would basically be the way in which we could equip the church to engage the questions that their non-Christian friends are asking and the,
sure,
the conversations that they're,
yeah,
having.
Yeah, because, you know, the world that we live in today is not the world that we lived in 30, 40 years ago, where you can just knock on a door with a tract and say, hey, if you were to die today...
Where are you going?
Which is kind of freaky. It's like, if I were to kill you right now, that's kind of how it feels. But those days are, I think, gone. I mean, God can still use those things, obviously, but I think that today we need more of what Francis Schaeffer called pre-evangelism. And so we're engaging with these people, and it takes more time. You know, we're actually engaging with them. We're answering their questions, helping them walk through their doubts, helping them get out of their own way to where they can actually see the gospel.
So, Matt, just quick take on you know, what stood out to you in this first part of the Worldview series. What's really stood out to you from the sermons and the times on Sundays?
Yeah, man, it was something that was very deep and meaningful. It was your reference to the angry dancing in Footloose.
Okay. Had you seen the movie?
Yeah. And I went back and watched the clip whenever you put it on Twitter.
It was so funny.
It inspired me.
So here's my question. Most Christians can be actually really intolerant.
Sure.
So not the intolerance of we just hold the different beliefs than you do and we disagree, but the intolerance of we're not going to be loving, we're not going to be charitable, we're not going to be gracious, we're going to be intolerant. Where have you seen Christians be intolerant in that new wave of intolerance?
Yeah, sure.
Towards non-Christians.
Sure. So I have a family member. You know, he likes to watch a lot of Bill O'Reilly and Glenn Beck and a lot of these guys, and he tends to want to focus a lot more on that as opposed to maybe the scriptures, possibly. Mm-hmm. And so whenever he hears issues of transgenderism or maybe it's homosexual marriage, maybe it's abortion, whatever the case might be, the initial response that I get from him is one of anger, one of disgust, which in a way are all great things, but they're never accompanied by grace.
Okay.
Which is a huge piece that whenever we see guys like Bill O'Reilly and Glenn Beck, that's a huge piece that they're missing in their message. And so it's still anti-gospel. You're still only getting half of the gospel.
Yeah, there's a sense in which they're disgusted by another practice or behavior or belief that they wouldn't hold to or they disagree with. But in such a way that are they never disgusted with their own sinful practices and behaviors? You know what I mean? There's an arrogance there to the way in which somebody else believes or practices or views the world.
Yeah, I think that many times, and I know I'm guilty of it as well, we forget that we were saved by grace.
Right.
And we're continually being transformed by God's grace.
Right.
And we need to be constantly reminded of God's grace. And so in that, I think that the issue falls in the idea of grace. I mean, we forget about it. And we think that, you know, well, I came to Jesus, and I'm the one getting better and doing better. And when in all actuality...
I'm the truth.
Yeah, when all actuality, Jesus is doing all of this.
Yeah.
You get to come along for the ride and experience, you know, his amazing work in you.
Yeah. That's right. And so if we understood that we've received grace, that it's only by grace that we have the views we have or know the truth that we know, then that should correlate to then extending that same grace to those that aren't there yet.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the people, you know, people that you engage with that are you know, non-Christians that have differing views and maybe non-biblical views, you should extend a lot of grace to those kinds of people. I mean, I know that Chandler talked about one time years ago, one of his sermons, he was talking about some hookers that came to his church, and people were judging them. And he goes, dude, they're hookers.
Yeah.
You know, you can't expect them to not act like hookers or dress like hookers.
Right.
You know, and so we can't hold them to the same standard that we would hold ourselves as believers when we know what's right and what's wrong.
And what's crazy about that is that even inside the church, we're failing those standards. We're falling right. short of those standards as well. And so that's quite hypocritical. And so there can be instances where we are intolerant in the wrong way of intolerance,
yeah.
right? Not showing Christian love, not showing Christian charity. And I wonder if in this culture now of tolerance, it's such a big deal. It's in a sense, a gospel message being proclaimed, how important it is for Christians to love biblically those that don't believe what we believe.
Yeah, I was just thinking that idea of distancing yourself so much from somebody's actions that you can find them repulsive and disgusting and just find it ridiculous that they would hold to that means that you must be so far removed from those types of people.
Yeah.
And there's ways that you can then go and engage those types of people. When we took our team to Brazil 2 years ago, we stopped off at a place where a lot of transsexual prostitutes would hang out, and we would talk with those men and encourage them and pray for them. I think of my time in LA, I got to meet a guy who ministered primarily to guys in transition that were prostitutes. And so we'd go out, I think the event kind of started at about 11:30 p.m. and we'd stay up all night with them. And these are sweet men, these are confused men, these are childlike men as well that have endured incredible abuse. And so then to see their situation with a sense of compassion was only possible through spending time with them.
So now it's not an issue, a transgender issue. Now it's it humanizes it. Absolutely. When you actually know somebody in that. So Matt, I want to transition into talking about morality, because the idea of moral relativism, which is what we talked about over the course of a couple of weeks on Sundays, is the prevailing view of our culture now.
Yeah.
That what you think is right is good for you, and what I think is right is good for me. You certainly can't put your right and wrongs on me, and I can't put my right and wrongs on you. We kind of just have our own view of what is right and what is wrong. What I want to know is, just from an apologetics perspective, how should we engage those that hold to a moral relativist view? We've got a young church. They are in relationships with people in the city and in the culture that don't believe what we believe, that hold to this moral relativity. How do we engage that?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think that first...
Thank you. I ask good questions.
yeah, you do. You're great.
Thank you.
Yeah. The first thing that I would say would be, when you go into a conversation like this, is to understand that the truth is on your side. Mm. Okay? Whether or not the person you're talking to chooses to believe it or not, that truth stands above and outside of them. And so it's there. It's with you. Mm. And so whenever you're walking into this situation, there's no need to fear. You can have total confidence that the Lord's got you, that He's going to give you the words to speak, and that you can engage thoughtfully and compassionately. And there's really nothing to fear. Mm.
And there's nothing that we could say that's going to ruin everything, right?
Right.
Isn't that sometimes the fear of, what if I just say something to completely screw this whole thing up?
Yeah, I think we overvalue our role in the whole process.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, I mean, it's God doing the work.
That's good.
You know, He's just using us to do some stuff, and He can use broken vessels to do some great things.
So then what do we do? Like, we're in the conversation, we're having coffee. What do we say? What do we do?
Yeah, so, you know, I think the first thing is to understand that it's not your job to close the deal. You know, we can plant the seed, we can work the garden, but God's going to give the growth. Mm-hmm. And be okay with just stepping into the conversation. Don't be afraid. Just walk into it, like we talked about just a minute ago, and be inquisitive. Mm. Ask questions.
Yeah.
And whenever you feel like you've asked enough questions, ask more questions.
Yeah.
And that's going to give you a great education in terms of what they believe. It's going to help you start to understand where they're coming from, their worldview, little bits and pieces that you can kind of pick up on and maybe use later.
Yeah.
And it's going to show them, it's going to demonstrate to them that you actually care for them.
Yeah.
Like, you love them.
Yeah, it's interesting. When you look at the Gospels, it seems like Jesus, with the large crowds, AJ, teaches, but with the individual or small group, he doesn't seem to first go or primarily go to teaching, but he asks questions.
That's right.
Where is there an instance where he's asking questions that seems to draw out the worldviews of those around him?
Yeah, there's the beautiful one where he has just fed the 5,000, the 4,000, the many thousands, and he sends his disciples out to hand out food. And as they're returning, there's a sense of them coming back to headquarters with him, and he's saying, hey, so who do they say that I am? And one disciple will say they think that you're the prophet. Another one will say they think that you're Elijah. And Jesus is unafraid of the wrong answers. He's not offended by the wrong answers. And there's no real sense the disciples corrected the wrong answers. So he's using this as a teaching time for them through questions. And then he pulls Peter aside. Hey, who do you think that I am? You're the Christ. You're the Messiah. And he affirms that in Peter. Yeah, you didn't get that answer from yourself. You got that from God. Those questions taught them the significance of who Jesus was in light of the contrasting views of the thousands of people that said otherwise.
Yeah. So, Matt, questions are unbelievably important. What questions, though? Like, what if I'm sitting down and I'm a young Christian and I'm sitting down over coffee with somebody that believes and holds to moral relativity, what are some questions that I'm asking?
Sure. So there are really a whole litany of questions that you could ask, but I like to really boil it down to two major questions. The first question is, what do you mean by that? So a lot of times when we're in a conversation with somebody, we're going to just talk around each other or past one another because we have these terms that we're discussing, but we actually have different definitions for the same terms. Mm. And so whenever you're talking to a moral relativist, you know, ask them, what do you mean by morality? What do you mean by relativism?
Yeah.
What do you mean by these terms? And so it's going to help them really start to think through their own issues because they may have gotten the idea just from someone that they talked to. It sounded like a really cool idea. Yeah. It sounded very loving to them.
Yeah.
And so they just went ahead. I'm going to go ahead and keep that for myself and use that as kind of quote unquote my truth. And I'm going to go with that. But maybe they haven't thought through exactly what those terms actually mean.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I think as you ask questions, there's always a good approach to making sure that they're open-ended, that they aren't just yes or no, that the conversation keeps going, they're effective, they provide information that you don't know, that they're concise, so it's not asking 17 questions and then they answer the 14th, but you're not sure if they were answering the 11th or the 17th because you just kept asking questions. Or that the questions should be relevant. They keep things on track. We're not just shifting gears randomly.
And so there's a sense in which when we're asking questions, we're actually wanting to know them.
Right.
Right? I mean, isn't that basically what it is? It's we're not quick to speak. We're quick to listen.
That's right.
We want to know them, like how they're viewing the world, how they're interpreting the world. I mean, that's what a worldview is. It's the story that we have for the world and how we make sense of our life in it. And they're trying to make sense of their life.
Yeah.
By holding to certain views and trying to figure out how that reconciles with what they see and what they've experienced and what they believe.
Yeah.
AJ, I think the questions have to be that way. And they will be that way if we're actually wanting to listen, right?
Right. As opposed to just collecting information or waiting for them to step in the trap that we've set for them so that we can prove their worldview wrong and polluted.
Right.
But to actually know them, to care for them.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's good.
Yeah, and just to what AJ's talking about caring for them and loving for them, I mean, realizing that this is going to be a marathon. It's not going to be a sprint.
Yeah.
You know, you may have 5 conversations like this. You may have 20 conversations like this. You may have endless conversations like this, right?
Yeah.
The goal is hopefully for them to know Jesus, but you really have to really step into it and engage with them and love them in this and say, you know what, I'm in this for the long haul, for the glory of God, and I'm going to love this person because Jesus loved me.
So I don't need to convince them in my time with them over coffee. That's not my job, is not to convince them.
That is not your job. That's what God does.
Okay.
God will do the persuasion. All your job is to do is to put a little stone in their shoe and to kind of irritate them in a good way.
Yeah.
Make them think about what they're saying.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, so what other questions?
Yeah, so the second question that I had was, how did you come to that conclusion?
Okay.
So a lot of times people, like I said, will have these ideas that they adhere to, and they haven't really thought through, why do I believe this? What are the arguments, you know, in the affirmative of this position of moral relativism, right? So you're just asking, how did you get there? Or they may say, you know, it might be like a random, dismissal of God kind of a question, like, Osiris, the god Osiris had the same, mythologically had the same story and whatever else as Jesus, so I'm going to reject Christianity outright. Well, how did you come to that conclusion? Did you watch a YouTube video? Did you, you know, did someone tell you that? Like how did you get there? Mm-hmm. And so you're, again, helping them think through their own position. And in a way, you are loving them mm-hmm. because you're helping them to see their own blindness. Mm-hmm. It's not for you to put a notch on your belt and say, look what I did, because yeah. You're trusting in the Holy Spirit the entire time to lead that conversation.
And going back to your first kind of anchor, in a sense, was the truth is on your side. Even if I don't know who Orsias or whatever, who's Orsias? Yeah, I don't know who that is, right? So even if I don't know who that is, what I know is that it's not truth.
That's right.
So if I know that truth is on our side, then even if I don't really understand that, I can still with confidence ask that question, hey, how did you come to that? And where'd you find out about that? And what you know, what turns did you make to come to that conclusion?
Yeah, and then you're getting an education. I mean you're so for instance, like you don't know who Osiris is, right? Who's Osiris?
Right.
Will you tell me about this god?
Yeah.
Like what are the similarities? What are the differences? Like what's going on here? Like yeah. Where did that come from? Like the whole idea of Osiris. Yeah. Like where did all that come from?
Yeah.
You know,
that's good. And that's what's interesting about that is the very definition of the old tolerance. It's the public discourse, the willingness to engage and actually learn what somebody believes and why, as opposed to the new tolerance, which is basically just a blanket acceptance of all views and beliefs as completely equal and valid.
Right.
Which I think, in a sense, is very dismissive and disrespectful to people's actually deeply held beliefs.
Sure, sure. Well, and it's funny. if you look at the new relativism, or I'm sorry, if you look at moral relativism, it's so interesting because you're saying that, well, you can believe morally what you believe, I can believe morally whatever I believe, so nobody really knows what morals really are. So therefore, it's pretty much the same thing as having no morals whatsoever.
Sure.
Because no objective morals do exist at that point for you, so you can't even talk about moral values, things that are good, things you should do or shouldn't do. There's no ought. Right? And so it just kind of turns into kind of gobbledygook, you know? I mean, honestly.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Matt, we're going to transition into a time of Q&A. AJ, where we'll answer a couple of questions when we get back. All right, we're going to answer some questions that some of the listeners, some of our church has sent in. The first one is this, and it's for both of you. How have you seen our contemporary culture's redefinition of tolerance affecting how Christians choose to either speak up or stay silent with the gospel?
You want to go first? Okay. Well, honestly, I think that with this whole idea of the new tolerance, I think that Christians have become afraid to speak out. We're afraid of being labeled intolerant. We have this huge fear of man, this huge fear of rejection, and so we want to give into that. And instead of fearing God, we're fearing man. And so we just give into that, saying, okay, well, I don't want to be saddled with this label because I'm not an intolerant person, right? Because we may not be intolerant in terms of classical intolerance, right? Mm-hmm. But to an outsider with a new intolerance kind of mindset, they may say, well, you're intolerant, and, a.k.a. you're not loving,
yeah.
When in all actuality, you may be loving,
yeah.
But just disagree with the person.
Yeah. So our greatest fear then is, what you're saying is, our greatest fear then is to be labeled intolerant. Like, that's the greatest, that's the worst thing that could happen to us as Christians. Is that basically what you're saying?
I mean, I think so. Yeah. I think that's, well, I don't think it's the worst thing that could happen to us. I think we think it is
right,
the worst thing that
right,
could happen
exactly.
to us. But I think we need to be okay with being labeled intolerant.
Yeah.
And then engaging with somebody thoughtfully and loving them well and then showing them that, no, I do love you.
Yeah.
But we need to be okay with, you know what, you're giving me that label, that's fine, but why don't we go sit down and have a conversation?
So why is that so personal to us? To be labeled intolerant or to have somebody disagree with us, why is that so personal to the Christian that holds to a certain belief, knowing that other people don't believe everything that we believe?
It's misunderstanding that the truth that we hold to is not ours.
Yeah.
It's holding that personally. I found this. I developed this. I researched this. This is mine. And therefore now it is me.
And so for them to reject that, they're in a sense rejecting you.
That's right.
Yeah. So then what becomes then the answer for that? Like, how do we engage that as maybe Christian leaders in a church, or just even Christian brothers towards our brothers and sisters? How do we engage that in our people? That fear.
Well, I think, and you know, AJ had talked about this earlier, but talked about how we need to be replaced with a greater fear of the Lord, and replace that fear of man with the fear of the Lord. Mm-hmm. I heard Keller talk one time about how someone said that, well, you're on the wrong side of history if you're against these issues, right? If you're against homosexual marriage and transgenderism and these things. And he goes, no, I'm really not, because Jesus is the one who wins in this story. Mm-hmm. So we're on the right side of history. So I think letting people know, no, we are on the right side of history. And then also, I think defining for our church what classical intolerance is. I mean, thank God that, you know,
yeah,
Bono is intolerant of AIDS.
That's right.
You know, or Martin Luther was intolerant of racism and segregation.
That's right.
I mean, thank God for that intolerance.
Right.
Right? So intolerance can be a beautiful thing if understood rightly.
Yeah, that's right. That's really good. So one question that I got, even in our own city group, was, okay, I understand moral relativism. I understand tolerance. I understand these kind of big issue things that, you know, how I should be postured towards them and understand them. But his question was, what about the in the moment? So this first question was, how is this affecting Christians in whether they choose to speak up or stay silent? You're saying that most of us are going to, you know, we're tending to staying silent because of fear. When and how do we speak up? And so are we always to be engaging everything? Should we always be attacking every different belief or view because of the vastness of the pervasiveness of this view in our culture? How should a Christian engage those kind of things? Like, when does he decide to?
I think whenever we engage with this, I think that we have been labeled intolerant so much that we may not want to engage the issue right off. Mm. I think we need to lead with love, lead with grace, and really get to know the people, and then bring the issues into play at some point. But I think that we need to lead with that, because we tend to be already saddled with a negative connotation.
Yeah, so that's really interesting, because for someone to become a Christian, we're asking them to convert to Jesus, not convert to a certain morality, right?
Right, right.
They don't have to convert from moral relativism to Christian morality to become a Christian.
Right.
They have to convert to Jesus.
Right.
And so we're almost, in a sense, going at it. We don't have to go at it that way. It's not like this direct route. If A happens, B happens, then C happens. In A being, they believe what we believe, B, they hold to it, you know, in the same way that we hold to it, C, now they become a Christian.
Yeah, I forget who said it, but Jesus doesn't make bad people good, but he makes dead people alive.
That's right. All right, guys, thanks. Maddie, thanks for being here, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.